could take on an overpopulated, underfunded asylum single-handedly. She could stand up to the proud and demanding Joseph Pulitzer. She could tough it out, jobless and penniless, in one of the toughest towns around. No doubt Nellie Bly was as fearless as they come. She even said once, "I always have a comfortable feeling that nothing is impossible if one applies a certain amount of energy in the right direction. If you want to do it, you can do it. The question is, do you want to do it?" An amazing attitude for one to have when dealing with worldly troubles. But what about when troubles more otherworldly come creeping in? February 4th, 1894, Nellie Bly and the Ghost. It was recorded live at the Slipper Room on March 25th, 2018. It was part of our show, The Secret Files of Nellie Bly.
Stage. She wears a scant costume and marches with the Amazons. Marches with the Amazons? Oh dear.
Such a waste of ink.
Nellie Bly goes to Albany to become a lobbyist in order to catch professional bribery in the act.
Outrageous.
Did you read today's World? Nellie Bly unearths a scoundrel favored by the police. Charles Cleveland, a man of leisure, debauches Central Park to his own vile uses. He drives her daily and invites young girls to ride. The police smile and assist in getting his prey. Oh, can you believe that?
Such trash.
You're talking about that horrid man, I hope.
I was talking about that rag you call a newspaper.
Nellie Bly spars with gentleman Jim Corbett. Four rattling rounds with the champion pugilist according to prize ring rules. Bly draws first blood and keeps the champion on the run with her fierce uppercuts. Aha! Yes! Yes! Right on the jaw! That's just what I would do!
What's that you're reading, dear?
Oh, nothing.
A swindling magnetic doctor caught at his tricks. He is advertised to give a big free exposition in Brooklyn tonight, but Nellie Bly has discovered, just in time, he uses ingeniously secreted wires by which he demonstrates...
Malarkey!
Yes, love her or loathe her, she kept America talking, and reading, and buying newspapers. Joseph Pulitzer's newspapers, to be precise. No matter what the nature of the assignment was, Nellie Bly handled every article she penned with her own unique style, point of view, and her own brand of dogged professionalism. Sometimes she just had to make the best out of certain assignments, seemingly frivolous subjects such as the piece that was published by The World on Sunday, February 4th, 1894. It was titled Nellie Bly and the Ghost. I can vividly recall when she recounted to me the origins of that story.
You know this is a ridiculous assignment, Mr. Pulitzer.
Close the door, Miss Bly. Please, please, just close the door. I can hear all those horrible sounds. Every sound I hear feels like a hammer to my brain. I have a difficult time dealing with loud, noises.
Spending a night in a haunted house. Ha! In New Jersey, no less. I thought I had finally proved to you that I was long past doing rubbish like this. Really, I have much grander ideas for stories if anyone is interested in listening.
What's this? Afraid you'll find the ghost, perhaps?
Pshaw! I have a terrific story where I could board an actual submarine.
Take this up with your editor. Why do you keep coming to me with these things?
Because they listen to you, Mr. Pulitzer. You're the big boss around here, aren't you?
I still don't see what this has to do
and
with me.
And you despise that editor as much as I do.
Yes, but he is a necessary evil.
So what does that make me?
Just write the story. You've done wonders with Drek like this. this in the past. Spin that straw into gold.
Ugh. If I find an actual ghost, could I get a raise?
Capture a ghost, and you can have the moon. Good luck.
I raced around the world in just 72 days without getting even a bonus from you. How much does that imbecile editor earn a week?
His annual salary
And how much wider is the New York World circulation due to my work?
Will you just take the assignment, Ms. Bly, and we shall talk of that another time. Oh, my ears.
Miss Bly? Miss Bly? Where are you going now? I have a Cornish game hen in the oven.
I am sorry, Mrs. Kilcuddy. I must pack my things at once. I have an important assignment I've been called for.
But it's such a tasty bird. And I've dressed it ever so beautifully. We can't let it go to waste.
You are quite right. Please offer it to Mrs. Glean down the street. She's elderly and has not a lot of money, the poor dear.
Hey! Don't let this scamp in here. Shoo! Shoo!
Oh, no, don't shoo him, Mrs. Kilcuddy. That's my favorite neighborhood pooch.
Oh, Nelly, how many favorite neighborhood pooches do you have at this pint?
Oh, this one's called Patty. How'd you find your way here, little fella? You know what? Patty, I'd like you to be my companion on my journey. They say that animals can sense the presence of ghosts.
Ghost?
Oh, well, of course, I don't believe in such things. Phooey. But I am off to a house in the wilds of New Jersey to see for myself and prove once and for all... Oh, easy now, Patty.
Oh, Nelly, do be careful. You mustn't hold such contempt for the strange mysteries out there. You may call me a fool, but as a little girl back in the old country, I once saw ghosts.
The imagination is a powerful thing, Mrs. Kilcuddy, and as you well know, I have made short work exposing hucksters and deceivers and others who trade in humbuggery. Now, where is my pistol?
Pistol? Miss Nelly!
Ah, here it is. Good, still loaded. I'll bring another one just in case.
Miss Nelly... You can shoot guns.
Oh, there's nothing to it. I learned from Emma Hickok, stepdaughter of Wild Bill. What a lady. She could give Miss Oakley a run for her money.
But you can't shoot at a ghost, can you?
No, but I can shoot at a charlatan, a thief, or a tramp. I predict it's someone of that order trying to scare folks away so that they can have the house for themselves.
Have you ever shot a person before?
Well, no.
Could you?
Well, I don't know.
How long will you be in this house?
Oh, just one night.
And with whom?
Well, just me and my lonesome. Oh, and Patty here.
Miss Nelly.
Oh, the deal is, I'm supposed to stay there from midnight to cock crow. Believe me, I'd love to find a ghost, but I really don't believe in them.
And whose spirit is supposed to haunt this house?
Well, legend has it that a beautiful girl was murdered there and buried in the cellar. People who have lived in the house have solemnly sworn to having heard all kinds of strange and terrifying noises, and to having seen, in the darkness, a little waxen hand that beckoned them. None of them ever dared to follow. Balderdash, I say.
Oh, my.
Well, this hand apparently opens and closes the cellar door when people are sitting in the kitchen while it's brightly lit. The latch lifts, and the door opens and shuts, and evidently an invisible form passes through. Well, this has proved to be more than human nerves can stand, and tenant after tenant, who have been attracted by the cheap rent, have had to give up and move away. Lately, the house has been given up entirely to the ghost. No one will live in it, and the story of the uncanny visitations, well, it's spread over the entire county, making the place one of horror to everybody thereabout. It has been impossible to convince those who have lived in the house and still live in the county that they have not seen and heard the ghost. One family declares that the spirit of the dead girl was seen in the barn milking a phantom cow with one horn. As I said, balderdash.
But, Miss Nelly, what if there are no spirits, but indeed some treacherous rapscallions hiding in wait? You'll be all alone in that miserable place.
I'll be fine, Mrs. Kilcuddy. You mustn't worry. Well, I think I have everything I need. Two revolvers, a knife, a dark lantern to show me ghosts, a copy of A Strange Story by Sir Edward Lytton to freeze my blood in case I get bored, this copy of Life's Monthly Calendar, in case the proceedings become too gloomy. Traveling rug, check. Flannel robe. Oh, and of course you, Patty. I must be on my way, my good Mrs. Kilcuddy. I have to catch the 7:30 ferry leaving from Christopher Street to Dover, New Jersey. So long. Later, when I was by myself on that ferry, I got to thinking very seriously over what I was about to do. I got frightened, but I hadn't the courage to say so. Anyway, it was too late to retreat, for I had made my boasts and given my promise to that arrogant editor of mine. I was not afraid of ghosts, or at least I thought I wasn't. I did not believe in them, but I did fear my imagination, my nerves. I feared myself. We reached Dover all too soon.
Miss Bly, is that you?
Yes, are you?
I'm Ben Wilkins. This is my Mrs. Joy.
The one and only Nellie Bly, here with us in the flesh. Oh, what an honor to meet you, Miss Bly.
Yes, pleased to meet you too, but come now. The house is about 16 miles from here.
It's gonna seem like 30 miles in this snow.
Yeah, enjoying the spring weather of ours? Sled is all hitched up. Come this way.
The very moment I was seated, we started off. And the further we went, the more my heart sank.
Are you warm enough, Miss Bly?
Yes, Mrs. Wilkins.
What a cute pup you got there, Miss Bly.
His name is Patty. When I decided to go ghost hunting, I thought I would take a dog, for it's claimed by ghost experts that dogs can see ghosts when mortals cannot, and that the hair on a dog's back will indicate the presence of a spirit as quickly as a thermometer will indicate a change in the temperature.
I'll tell you, I didn't need no dog to do the seeing for me up at that house.
Ben spent a night there himself last week. That's when we decided to put word out to the newspapers. It hasn't been the same ever since, eh, Ben? How is your courage, Miss Bly?
Well, I brought it all with me. But I'm a bit frightened, if I'm being completely honest. You've been through it, Mr. Wilkins. Tell me all about it.
It ain't a fit place for anyone to stay.
But you say you didn't actually see any apparitions.
I saw a cellar door shut, and I saw it open the next time I went back. And I heard things, and I saw my coat taken from the door and put all the way at the end of the hall while we were all downstairs. Things that couldn't happen all by themselves.
Are you afraid, Miss Bly?
I'm afraid of living things. Counterfeiters, moonshiners, and tramps. Do you think there might be such people in the house that they do all these strange things merely to keep the place free for themselves?
Oh, really? Let's allow Ben to keep his eye on the road ahead.
We'll soon be up on Maze Mountain.
Oh, it's a very steep, wild place. Once when Barnum Circus was driving down the road, some horses ran away, and the wagon and all tumbled down into the valley below. The horses and drivers were killed, and a number of wild animals escaped.
Here's the place.
Well, now, if anything should happen, I have often said that I want a coffin not made in the regular wide at the shoulders and narrow at the feet plan, but perfectly straight, and that I want to be put in a vault, not buried, and be sure to see that Patty gets safely home.
If you're gonna talk like that, I'll turn around and drive you back.
You can't tell what may happen, so we should just as well prepare for the unexpected.
I don't think it's right that you should spend all night in this house by yourself.
But I've promised.
If you want, we'll stay around somewhere on the outside, and if anything happens, you can just scream, and we'll hear you.
No, that was not my agreement. I have promised, you know, to stay here alone. Supposing I have not the courage to stay all night, which way must I go to find the nearest house?
You can't go anywhere. About a mile across the hill is a house, but you die in the snowdrifts or brooks or swamps before you get very far. If you're gonna stay here, you're gonna stay here until we come back for you in the morning. You can't get away unless you go out and freeze to death.
Mr. Wilkins, help me carry Patty up to the house. I don't want him to get wet with the snow.
If I were to stay here, Patty would frighten me to death.
Well, I'm afraid I won't be able to tell when he does see a ghost, for his hair stands up all the time. We made our approach. We found the door was unlocked. We lit a match. There was a wood pile among the provisions left for me during the day. Once we got a little fire going, we proceeded to explore the gloomy little house. On the floor where I was to remain were three rooms opening into each other. One was evidently the best room. An enclosed stairway led up to three unplastered attic rooms. We looked upstairs. Mother Hubbard's cupboard was not in it for bareness. Then we went downstairs to see the kitchen and the cellar door that won't stay shut. I was most uncomfortable. I could fancy I saw the waxen hand beckoning me to come into the dark, damp cellar. And I knew if I did go, I'd find a distillery or counterfeiters instead of the ghost. We opened the door into the cellar and looked in very timidly and carefully. I did not see any sign of a grave. But then years had gone by since the grave was dug there. I did see one thing, however. Someone had very recently been digging in the cellar. I fought against the urge, but it was time to wish my companions good night.
I still think it's better for us to linger around, Miss Bly. I feel like a brute going away and leaving you alone.
No one can tell what might happen.
Well, whatever happens, I'll die hard with my knife and two revolvers.
Josephat, revolvers?
You know, I can drive out. I can't sleep anyways. We'll come out and see if everything's all right, and you can tell us if you want us to take you away.
Please don't. I assure you my nerves are all right. Go back and go to bed, and come for me about 6 or 6:30 in the morning.
Are you sure now, Miss Bly?
Yes, I am. Good night.
Be sure to make sure the door is locked good and tight.
I will.
Very well. Good night.
Good night.
Allow me to interrupt for a moment. A great deal of what you've heard so far was mentioned in the article that was published in The World, February 4th, 1894. What is detailed in the article from this point, in my view, is rather anticlimactic. There are some noises that startle our heroine, some bumps in the night and strange sounds coming from a door, the source of which Nellie discovers are accidentally caused by Patty the dog. The pistol is drawn, but never fired. Nellie ends up falling asleep peacefully and being awakened by Ben Wilkins, who was watching the whole time, etc., etc., etc. So far as stories go, a wonderful setup is followed by a rather pedestrian excuse for a payoff. It's a pity, because the real story was much more interesting, and Joseph Pulitzer and his editors refused to print it. Here's what really happened, according to Nellie. Her nerves were never really like that again. There definitely were some noises afoot.
Oh, Patty! What is it, Patty? What is it? What was that? Please, oh, please, let it be a tramp. Oh, Patty, I'm too afraid to go into the kitchen to see. I'm so frightened. Oh, come on, girl. Pull yourself together. Straighten up. Go on. Patty, Patty, don't leave me here alone. Oh, Patty, Patty. Patty, boy. Patty, Patty, darling. Patty? Oh, dear. Oh, my.
my pistol. Where's my pistol? Oh, here it is. Oh, all right, you. I am warning you. I'm armed. And I'm going to enter the kitchen. Surrender now, and you will not be hurt. It's time to give up the game. I'm coming in. Oh my. Oh, dear. Hello? Oh, Patty. Hello. Who is that?
It's me, Ben Wilkins. I've been shot.
Mr. Wilkins? Oh, no.
I've been shot in the leg. Did you just shoot me, Miss Bly?
Mr. Wilkins, I'm very sorry to have injured you, but it seems that I've exposed this charade of yours.
Charade?
You were the ghost, eh? It's what I suspected all along.
No, believe me. I never left the grounds because I felt too guilty to leave you here alone. And then I heard you scream, ah, I need a doctor.
Well, we'll get you to a doctor. Only first, you'll tell me one thing. How did you achieve that effect?
Effect?
Don't play coy with me, Mr. Wilkins. You know, the diaphanous hand that beckoned to me from behind the door. I must know how that was achieved.
You saw it then?
The ruse is over. Make your confession, and I will go easy on you and Mrs. Wilkins in my article.
Easy on me?
Ben? Oh, Ben. Oh, what in heaven's name?
While Mrs. Wilkins went to fetch help for her husband, I quickly studied the house with a closer eye. I hoped to find a hidden mirror, lamp, or veil of gauze, or any of the materials used to create such illusions by hoodwinkers and fakes. But I could find nothing. The next day, back in the offices of the New York World.
No! We cannot run this piece, not like this!
But, Mr. Pulitzer, this is an excellent story, filled with action. The public will thrill to this adventure. I think I know my readers better than anyone.
You do not seem to understand, Miss Bly. You shot and injured an innocent man! The only reason you're not sitting in a jail cell right now is that I have very swiftly handled the matter and compensated poor Mr. Wilkins for his horrible trouble.
Compensated? Compensated? So that's it, eh? If I wanted proper compensation from you all this time, all I needed to do is have someone shoot me in the leg?
Get out of my office! And don't you dare... Ah!
So that's all there was to it. Nellie's editors rewrote the story, particularly the second half of it, so that it wouldn't be a total loss for the paper, but it left an awfully bitter taste in Nellie's mouth. In fact, she was afraid she was becoming too familiar with that flavor of injustice. It was not long after that that she took a very long hiatus from reporting. About a year later, she shocked all of us when she married the wealthy industrialist Robert Seaman. Seaman was 42 years her senior. However, what did not shock us is that, being the force of nature that she ended up taking a very active role in her husband's business. How active? Well, how can I put it? I still have a copy of her business card from that time. May I read it to you? The Ironclad Factories are the largest of their kind and are owned exclusively by Nellie Bly, the only woman in the world personally managing industries of such a magnitude. Quite a business card, eh? Quite a woman. Still, I think that night she spent in that haunted house outside of Dover, New Jersey, always stayed with her. And when we spoke over tea and sandwiches, she would often continue to puzzle at length over what could possibly have created that seemingly transparent hand at the doorway. She never did reach a conclusion that suitably satisfied her.
Thank you. I could be. Between my pals and then the gals, I had myself a spree. I got home late, sneaked through the gate so as not to wake my wife. It worked no good, for there she stood with a big old carving knife. Put the knife away, Nellie, put it back in the drawer. Darling, if you cut my heart out, I won't love you anymore. I said, hi, now you're looking swell. She never even stirred. I tried to wink, but I don't think she heard a single word. She looked at me and I could see she must have smelled my breath. She took a swig with that short thing and scared me half to death. Step, then I took three or four. She missed me in the kitchen, but she stabbed the kitchen door. She battered like a brandy keg for missing that away. She would have cut me plumb in half, so then I had to say, put that knife away, Nelly, put it back in the drawer. Darling, if you cut my heart out, I won't love you anymore. Look here, woman, if you don't like them, they're jails. You better take that carving knife and manicure your nails. Then I dove out the window, 'cause I couldn't reach the door. I got outside and cried and cried, and then I cried some more. Put that knife away, Nelly, put it back in the drawer. Darling, if you cut my heart out, I won't love you anymore.
And that concludes February 4th, 1894, Nellie Bly and the Ghost. I believe we've been left with more questions than when we began. But perhaps, though frustrating, Nellie herself would have preferred this elusive end. As she once said, I always liked fog. It lends such a soft, beautifying light to things that otherwise, in the broad glare of day, would be rude and commonplace. Yes, perhaps it is better, after all, that the light be dim and things barely discernible than to lose all mystery in exposure. But to unveil the mystery of this talented case, Joseph Pulitzer was played by Alan LaForest, Arthur Brisbane was played by David Linton, Mrs. Kilcuddy was played by Mary Murphy, Ben Wilkins was played by Eric Davy Gislison, Joy Wilkins was played by Casey LaForest, and the part of Nellie Bly was played by me, Ali Silva. The song, Put That Knife Away, Nelly, was written by the team of Maxwell, Herrick, Haynes, and Burns. It was performed by Martina Da Silva, accompanied by Nico Slater. February 4th, 1894, Nellie Bly and the Ghost was written by Sylvan Sandovar. It was directed by Holly Payne Strange. The Secret Files of Nellie Bly was produced by Gustavo Rodriguez, Daniel and Rebecca Graves, and me for Fireside Mystery Productions. Jason Graves composed our theme music. Our musical score is improvised by Steve Blanco. Our sound effects designer and engineer is Greg Russ. Our technical director at the Slipper Room is Johnny Goddard. And our production coordinator is Bronte Shane Orengo. You know how great it feels to make someone smile? Well, now you can spread the love across the world from the comfort of your own phone. We hope you'll take a quick moment to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Your feedback does a lot to keep the lifeblood flowing in our little production company. And while you're at it, if you haven't yet, subscribe. You can also see what we really look like when you find us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram or Twitter with our handle @Fireside Mystery.
You may not be able to see us through your earbuds, but trust me, we look fabulous, and you could look fireside fabulous too. We have lots of Fireside Mystery Theater swag that would make great gifts you can score for yourself or for the FMT fan in your life. T-shirts, hoodies, pillows, totes, mugs, notebooks, stickers, all sorts of cool kit with our logo. Lots of sales are always popping up too. Just go to firesidemysterytheater.com/merch and browse around. It just so happens that we have a sale currently going in celebration of World Book Day. Today, Monday, April 23rd through Wednesday, April 25th, you'll find all of our merch discounted when you use the code READ30. That's READ30. Don't miss out. Our next live show takes us on a trip back to that freaky town we like to visit, Sunken Harbor, the Strawberry Festival. Join us at the Slipper Room on Sunday, April 29th at our new time, 5 p.m. Tickets are on sale now at slipperroom.com. Don't forget to check out our recommendation of the ever-fascinating Breaking Walls podcast. You can find it wherever you're listening to this one. It's a great documentary-style podcast created by James Scully that dives into some fun and little-known details about the golden age of radio. He's got an episode coming up in May that I'm quite looking forward to. It's an exploration of the radio career of Orson Welles between 1937 and 1941. As you can imagine, Welles has been a huge influence on what we do with Fireside, so we can't wait to hear it. Mr. Scully is also cooking up some original audio drama, too. So the Breaking Walls podcast feed is one to keep an ear on. Stay tuned for February 18th, 1894, The Siren of the Coleman House. It will be the fourth and final podcast installment of The Secret Files of Nellie Bly. Have we saved the best for last? Oh, why not do your best to find out? We promise not to keep you waiting too long. This is your own Ali Silva, releasing you to your own imagination. And until our next encounter, do remember to mind the shadows.